They strained against each other, and suddenly her body went rigid and her golden eyes opened so wide they seemed to fill her face as he went sliding full length into her. After the cold green water, she was so hot that it was almost unbearable, and he cried out involuntarily. Both Job and Dedan glanced around in surprise, then looked away in embarrassment. But Sean and Claudia were oblivious to all the world. It was over very swiftly, and she hung around his neck, exhausted as a marathon runner at the end of a grueling race. Sean recovered his voice first. "I'm sorry," he said. "It was so quick. I couldn't wait. Did you?" "I was there long before you." She grinned up at him, a lopsided and uncertain grin. "It was like being in an auto accident. Quick, but devastating." They remained locked together by the embrace of her legs and arms for a long time, quiet and resting, until she felt him shrivel and slip away, and only then she released the grip of her legs and reached up with her mouth to kiss him tenderly. "Now you belong to me, and I to you. Even if I die today, it won't matter so much. I have had you in me." "Let's try for a little more than one day." He smiled gently down at her. "Get dressed now, my love." He handed her back her clothing, "while I check on what's happening in the real world out there." He swam away from her and went to Job. "What do you see?" he asked. "I think we're clear of the lines," Job answered, avoiding Sean's eyes tactfully. Strangely, it did not embarrass Sean that Job knew what had happened between Claudia and himself. He still felt elated and triumphant at the consummation of their love, and nothing could degrade it. "As soon as it's dark enough, we'll swim the tree in towards the bank and then get ashore." Sean glanced at his Rolex. "Not more than 2 hours to sunset." "Keep your eyes open," he said, and swam across to Dedan to repeat the warning. He tried to estimate the rate of the current by watching the bank and decided it was not more than 2 miles an hour. They would still be dangerously close to the Renamo lines when the sun set, and the river was flowing eastwards towards the sea, so they would have to work their way round on through General China's forces to reach the Zimbabwe border in the west. It was a formidable task, but Sean still felt optimistic and invulnerable. He left Dedan's side and swam back to Claudia. "You make me feel good," he said. "That's going to be my job in future," she assured him. "But what do we do now?" "Nothing until dark, except steer this liner down the river." She cuddled against him under the water, and they held each other and watched the river banks drift slowly by. After a while, she said, "I'm getting cold." They'd been in the water for almost 2 hours, Sean realized, and though it was only a few degrees below their body temperature, it was gradually chilling them through. She slanted her eyes at him and gave him a naughty grin. "Can't you think of something to prevent hypothermia?" she asked. "Or do I have to make a suggestion?" "Well," he pretended to reflect, "we can't light a fire."
"Can't we?" she asked. "Do you want to bet?"
And she reached down, and after a few seconds she whispered, "See? Nothing to it. And I didn't even use matches." "It's a miracle," he agreed, and began to unbuckle her belt again.
"This time, let's see if we can make the miracle last longer than 10 seconds, she suggested.
As the sun set, it turned the surface of the river to a luminous serpent with scales of furnace orange and glowing crimson. "Now we can begin working in towards the bank," Sean ordered, and they began to swim the floating tree across the current. It was heavy and ungainly, most of its bulk below the surface, and it resisted their efforts to move it closer to the bank. All four of them kept at it, kicking out strongly and ponderously. It began to swing across the wide waters. The sun slipped below the horizon, and the waters turned black as crude oil. The trees along them were dark, cut-out silhouettes against the last glow of the sunset, but they were still 30 meters from the southern bank. "I'll swim from here," Sean decided. "Keep close together. Don't get separated in the dark. Is everybody ready? They bunched up, clinging to the same branch. Sean reached for Claudia's hand and opened his mouth to give the order, and then closed it again and cocked his head to listen. He was surprised that he hadn't heard it before. Perhaps the sound had been muffled by the high banks of the river and the tall trees that lined its winding course. However, it was suddenly loud and unmistakable, the sound of an outboard motor running at high speed. "Oh, shit," he whispered bitterly, and looked towards the near bank. Only 30 meters away, it could just as well have been 30 miles. The whine of the motor rose and fell as the acoustics of water and trees played tricks, but it was clearly coming downstream fast, running down from the direction of the Renamo lines. Sean ducked his head to gaze through a chink in the vegetation, and he saw a glow in the darkness, a beam of light that shafted briefly across the night sky, and then bounced from the dark trees along the bank, glinted from the water, and swept boldly along the banks. "Renamo patrol boat," Sean said, "and they are looking for us." Claudia tightened her grip on his hand, and no one else spoke. "We'll try to hide in here," Sean said. "But I don't see how they can miss us. Get ready to duck under when the light hits us." The sound of the motor changed, slowing down, and then the craft swept round the upstream bend of the river, a few hundred yards distant, but coming down swiftly on the current towards them. The beam of the spotlight played alternately along each bank, lighting them like day. It was an enormously powerful beam, probably one of the portable battle lights, similar to the one which had trapped Sean at the top of the cliffs. As the beam switched from bank to bank, it briefly illuminated the craft and its crew. Sean recognized it as an 18-foot inflatable Zodiac driven by a 55-horsepower Yamaha outboard, and though he couldn't count the occupants, there were at least 8 or 9 of them, and they had a light machine gun mounted in the bows. The man with the battle light was standing amidships. The beam of light glanced over their refuge, dazzling them for an instant with its malevolent white eye, passing on and leaving them, blinded by its brilliance, then coming back remorselessly and holding them captive. Sean heard someone give an indistinct order in the Shangani language, and the Zodiac altered course towards them, the beam of the battle light still fastened on them. All four of them sank low in the water, until only their nostrils were exposed, and they cowered behind the branch to which they were clinging. The helmsman of the Zodiac throttled back and slipped the engine into neutral. The black rubber craft drifted on the current level with them, but 20 feet off. The battle light darted and probed the leafy mass. "Turn your face away," Sean told Claudia in a tight whisper, and took her in his arms below the surface. Even their tanned faces would shine in the light, and he screened her and turned the back of his head towards the Zodiac. "There is nobody there," somebody said in Shangani. Although spoken at conversational level, the voice carried clearly across the water to where they were hiding. "Go around," another voice ordered in a tone of command, and Sean recognized the Shangani sergeant who had been his escort. A white wake spread out behind the Zodiac, as it began to circle the floating tree. The light beam cast stark black shadows from the tangled branches and struck dazzling reflections when it touched the water. As the Zodiac circled, they paddled quietly to the further side of their leafy refuge, and when the beam fastened on them, they slid softly below the surface, trying not to gasp for breath as they came up again. The deadly game of hide-and-seek lasted all of eternity. Before the voice in the Zodiac said again, "There is nobody there, we are wasting time." "Keep circling," the sergeant's voice answered. And then, after another minute, "Gunner, fire a burst into the tree." In the bows of the Zodiac, the muzzle flashes of the RPD light machine gun twinkled like fairy lights. But a storm of shot tore into the floating tree with brutal and stunning savagery. It cracked in their eardrums and thumped into the branches over their heads, cutting loose a shower of leaves and twigs. It ripped away slabs of bark and kicked spray from the surface of the water, odd shots ricocheting into the night, wailing like demented spirits. Sean pulled Claudia below the surface, but still could hear the bullets plunging into the water above them or striking the trunk of the tree. He kept down until his lungs burned as though they were filled with acid, and only then pulled himself to the surface to catch another breath. The gunner in the Zodiac was firing taps, not a single continuous burst. Like a Morse operator on the key, an expert gunner has his own distinctive style that others can recognize. This one fired double taps, 5 rounds each. It needed a concert pianist's touch on the trigger to achieve such precision. As Sean and Claudia came back to the surface, straining for the sweet taste of air, Dedan also came up only 3 feet in front of them. The reflection of the battle light lit his head clearly. His short woolly beard streamed water. His eyes were like balls of ivory in his ebony face, and his mouth was open, drinking in air. A bullet touched his temple just above the ear. His head flinched to the shot, and it opened his scalp cleanly as a saber cut. Involuntarily he cried out, a glottal bellow like that of a hot-shot bull buffalo, and then his head fell forward, and he sank face down into the dark waters. Sean lunged out and caught his upper arm, pulling him back to the surface before he drifted away. But his head lolled, and his eyes had rolled back in their sockets, exposing only the whites. However, the men in the Zodiac had heard his cry, and the Shangani sergeant shouted to one of his men, "Get ready to throw in a grenade." Then to them, "Come out of there. I'll give you 10 seconds. "Job, answer him," Sean ordered with resignation. "Tell him we are coming out." Matabili and Shangani could understand each other, and Job shouted to them not to fire again. Claudia helped Sean keep Dedan's head above the surface, and between them they pulled him towards the Zodiac. The battle light dazzled them, but hands reached down from out of the glare and one at a time dragged them on board. Shivering like half-drowned puppies, they huddled in the centre of the boat. They had Dedan's body stretched out between them, and Sean lifted his head gently into his lap. He was unconscious, barely breathing, and gently Sean twisted his head to examine the bullet wound across his temple. For a moment he did not recognize what he was seeing. From the long, shallow wound bulged something white and glistening in the lamplight. Beside him Claudia shuddered violently and whispered, "Sean, it's his... She couldn't bring herself to say it. And only then Sean realized that Dedan's brain, still contained in the tough white membrane of the dura mater, was bulging out through the rent of his skull, like an inner tube through a hole in an auto tire. The Shangani sergeant gave an order, and the helmsman gunned the outboard motor and swung the Zodiac upstream. They ran at full throttle back towards the Renamo lines. Sean sat on the floorboards with Dedan's head in his lap. There was nothing he could do, except clasp his wrist and feel Dedan's pulse grow weaker and more erratic, then finally fade away altogether. "He's dead," he said quietly. Job said nothing, and Claudia turned her face away. Sean held the dead head in his lap all the long return. Only when the helmsman cut the engine and coasted into the bank did he look up. There were lighted lanterns and dark shapes awaiting them at the landing. The Shangani sergeant gave a brusque order, and 2 of his men lifted Dedan's corpse off Sean's lap and dumped him face down on the muddy bank. Another trooper grabbed Claudia's arm and dragged her to her feet. He shoved her roughly ashore, and when she whirled on him furiously to protest, he lifted his AK butt to strike her in the centre of her chest. Sean was close beside him. He caught the man's arm and stifled the blow. "Do that again, you son of a syphilitic hyena," he said softly in Shangani, "and I'll hack off your mtodo with a blunt axe and make you eat it without salt." The trooper stared at him, amazed more by his perfect Shangani than the threat itself. And on the bank, the Shangani sergeant let out a bellow of delighted laughter.
"Better do what he says," he warned his trooper, "unless you are very hungry. This one means what he says."
Then he grinned at Sean.
"So you talk Shangani like one of us, and you understood everything we said."
He shook his head ruefully. "I won't let you fool me again."